funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does black market trade threaten endangered butterfly species? And why are the offenders so much harder to catch than the hapless insects they steal? When newly hired Fish and Wildlife agent Ted Newcomer was assigned to track down a Japanese butterfly dealer who did illegal business at L.A. County's annual bug fair, he was annoyed. It sounded like a less-than-thrilling rookie gig, and Newcomer was no fan of insects. But as wildlife journalist Jessica Spiert reveals in her new book, the case would turn out to be among the most challenging and certainly the most bizarre of Agent Newcomer's law enforcement career. The book is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. Jessica, welcome to THINK.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So, butterfly smuggling almost sounds like some sort of mythological joke crime, like cow tipping, which we joke about here in Texas. But in fact, it has tremendous ecological implications. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it really does. And it's amazing. This is something most people don't realize. I mean, first of all, butterflies are very much an indicator species of the health of the environment, and they're disappearing very quickly in this country. I mean, they're second to bees as far as importance for pollination for our food sources. But it's funny, whenever you talk about butterfly smuggling, the first thing I think people tend to think is, what's the big deal? Yet if you were talking about chimps or elephants or tigers or pandas, there'd be outrage. But it's the same sort of thing that's going on in the insect trade, which is a booming trade and is decimating a lot of butterflies and insects.
I was amazed to read that wildlife smuggling as a whole ranks third in global crimes in terms of economic impact behind drugs and human trafficking.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, the reason is a lot of the same people who deal in the drug smuggling, the gun running, money laundering, I mean, all of this stuff will also deal in endangered species and endangered species parts because it's another commodity. And if they get caught, it's not nearly the penalties that there are for anything else. So it sort of goes hand in hand.
So how do butterfly smugglers collect their samples?
Butterfly smugglers a lot of times will, first of all, what Kojima had is he commanded a network of catchers around the globe. And either they will collect the eggs and they raise the eggs along with the food plants in order to have perfect species, or they will actually catch a very endangered butterfly early on, before the wings have been tattered and all, some of the really, really endangered ones that people have trouble rearing, like the Hospiton, the Homerus, the Chakai. So they are out there. It's amazing. It's like anything else where they are out there in force. They will train, some of these dealers will go and train locals in different parts of the world as far as how to catch butterflies, what particular butterflies to look for.
And some of these butterflies are worth tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of them are worth a lot of money. I mean, there's one that wasn't one that Kojima was dealing with, but another dealer that I met in Tokyo was going that summer that I was there. He was going to northern India area to train locals to look for a butterfly called Papilio elephanor, which was, people had thought it was extinct, and actually it was rediscovered last year. But he was training locals because if somebody could catch that butterfly or could rear these butterflies, get the eggs, they will go for $45,000.
And this is going to sound like a silly question to you, but some people might wonder why we can't just wait until the butterflies live out their natural life cycle. But it's because those wings get damaged and then they're not worth as much.
Yeah,
is that
they
it?
Do. I mean, the wings, as butterflies are flying, they get scarred, they get torn, they get scratched. And you want perfect specimens, which is why a lot of times people think of butterfly farms and, oh, isn't this lovely? You know, the butterflies, they just pick them up off the ground. Well, that's not what happens. Obviously, they're reared for sale, like anything else, because you do want those perfect specimens. Otherwise, even with the slightest scratch, the value drops.
And so what they do is raise these butterflies and then kill them the moment they emerge.
Not the moment. They have to spread their wings. The wings have to harden. And it is actually very interesting. I had seen one Skype tape of Kojima where he had a hatching net up in his bedroom where he was rearing some butterflies. And one had hatched and had been alive, I guess, for a couple minutes. And he brought it down in front of the camera with the Skype tape and he actually said, "Isn't this a gorgeous butterfly?" and showed it to Ed Newcomer, and then pinched the thorax, which is how you can kill them, and had the dead butterfly. What a gorgeous butterfly. There have been other people. There were two collectors. This was a case that happened back in the 90s in California with Skulski and Kroll, who collected a lot of Indra butterflies. And what they would do is Skull would put the pupae above his bed so he could watch to wait and see when it was going to hatch. And when it did, he would take the butterflies after they had hatched, spread the wings, and he would actually stick them in glassine envelopes, still alive. So they were entombed in these envelopes, and he would put them in the refrigerator. And then when the wings had hardened so that none of the grease, nothing would come out and stain the wings, then he would pop them into a freezer, and that would kill them.
That's just sadistic.
It's really weird, isn't it? I mean, there was a great story where one of the agents had a tip that, you know, Skulski was collecting all this, and they went into the house, and he didn't know they were in the refrigerator, and he opened the door, and he saw all these glassy envelopes filled with butterflies, and suddenly as the light and the heat hit the butterflies, all he could hear was the scratching of their appendages, the little legs, against the glassine envelopes. And he said it sounded like something out of Silence of the Lambs.
Wow. So I have to say, part of the reason that this story is so interesting is because the bad guy in the story, Yoshi Kojima, is really an interesting character. Like a lot of cons, he was absolutely charming until you crossed him.
Absolutely. I actually went and met him after I was pretty much done with this story, and I sort of wanted, I was obsessed, I had to meet him. And I didn't really know what to expect. I had heard from some other people that he was very charming. Ed Newcomer, who knew him, didn't think he was quite so charming with all that he had had to put up with. But when I met him, he was an incredibly charming, very, very interesting man. But yes, he did not like to be crossed. And he was very demanding of your time, of your attention, whatever. And he could turn on a dime. And you never knew when that was going to happen. And that's sort of the hair trigger, you know, scary thing about him.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you, Jessica, because your experience with him is, in fact, the last chapter of the book, and it's fascinating. But it certainly could have been a book on its own with just telling the story of Newcomer catching Kojima. Did you go to Japan thinking this may or may not be part of the book? You just wanted to go?
I had absolutely no idea where Kojima was going to be. He had been in prison here, and he had been released, and he refused to speak to anyone. And I knew that before that, he used to travel the world gathering butterflies. You never knew where this guy was going to be. He really was all over the place. And so I had no idea. I didn't know Japan. I really didn't know people in Japan. And as I said, you know, just as Newcomer had become obsessed with Kojima, Kojima was obsessed with butterflies, I became obsessed with Kojima. It was, make somebody like this tick. What is it that drives them to this point of obsession? And I really felt that one way or the other, whether I met him, I didn't meet him, whatever, I had to make that journey, I had to make that trip and try to meet this man. And that's what I did. I went over there and really had to go undercover because I knew he wouldn't speak to me, and sought him out and managed to meet him.
So when you met him, he had no idea that you had been following his story for years?
No.
Huh.
No. No, and that was one of the advantages that I had, and I was really very careful with this. I wanted to know everything I could about this man inside and out before I went over, and I've learned that that is pretty much what undercover agents do ahead of time. You want, it's like a chess game, and you do want to know everything you can about the person that you're after before you ever meet him. You want to know how they're going to answer something, everything, so that you're prepared. And that's what I tried my best to do.
And you have not only a professional acting background, but you have 10 mystery novels that you've written under your belt. Did all that play into you sort of playing it cool when you were able to track down Kojima yourself?
I think it really did. Certainly the acting background has always helped. I have an amazing love for characters, for people, for dialogue. And with the mystery novels, when I was researching them, I would research them the same way as I would a role when I was acting or my nonfiction magazine articles. I would go and try to hang out with agents in the field and hear their stories, get to meet people, and you sort of put yourself, you're playing a role in a sense, in order to, you're living vicariously, you're playing a role, you're getting information, and that's pretty much the mindset that I went over to Japan with.
Jessica Spirit is my guest. She's a journalist specializing in wildlife enforcement stories. Her new book is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. We'll resume our conversation with Jessica in a couple of minutes. You can join us by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. Right now, I have Jeff Whittington in the studio, senior producer of Think, host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Our obsession today is to get
as
far as possible toward the end of the membership campaign. Last I heard, there was about $247,000 left to raise. The overall goal, $625,000. So we're really getting close to being just within a couple hundred thousand dollars, which means just a few more days, really, especially if you will call right now at 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org.
We have heard from many of you already today, and we really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Elaine Starr in Dallas, Jerry Bauer in Grapevine. Thank you, Cesar Hernandez in Carrollton, and William Payne in Dallas. Your contributions really matter, and they all add up over time and allow us to continue bringing you the programming that you really care about and that you love and that you tune in for and hang out in your car waiting to hear.
Do your part right now, please, by calling 888-694-6931. Choose to support the station that you've already chosen to listen to on the web at kera.org. If you listen to the show online, that's a great reason to support the station there at kera.org. If you download our daily podcasts, if you're one of the several scores of thousands of people every month who download the podcast and enjoy the show, either here in North Texas or elsewhere in the country or even around the world, we would ask maybe that you support the station as well. It's really easy to do right there at KERA.org because everything KERA provides to you comes with a cost. We actually rely on your contributions for 61% of the revenue necessary to run this radio station. So please do your part right now. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute at kera.org.
We do have copies available today at or above the $120 contribution level. Thank you gifts. We have Winged Obsession by Jessica Spirit. Jeff and I have both read this book. Jeff, I have to tell you, I raced through it. It really is. I mean, everything's called a page turner, and some of them are, and some of them aren't. This one really, I mean, I didn't want to stop and sort of put my studying aside to make dinner because I had to know what happened. It's really a fascinating book. If you care about wildlife, it's great. It brings you inside this world that I knew nothing about, about insect collectors, about the smuggling issue. It's really, really fascinating reading.
It is a fascinating conversation, too, today on the show, and we're going to bring you more of that conversation live here in just a couple of minutes. But we're taking a break right now to encourage you to support the station. As Chris mentioned, we would be thrilled to thank you for your contribution at $120 or more with your very own copy of Jessica Spirit's book, Winged Obsession. The book's out. You can check out reviews as well, and it's been very well received. We're really excited to have her as our guest today. We're just thanking you with a copy of the book when you join the station, if that's what you'd like. We have, of course, all kinds of other stuff, Ken Burns documentaries. There's all kinds of books available. Look at the list of thank you gifts online at kera.org.
Your contribution is essentially paying your public radio bill. We talk about paying our expenses here at the station, but, you know, you're part of the team. You're part of the formula of public radio. Our expenses really are your expenses. So whatever you could chip in now, maybe a few dollars a month, maybe a friends level membership at $1,500 or above, whatever amount you can do, we really appreciate hearing from you now. It's important to the station that you love and rely on. Go online to kera.org to make your contribution or give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Summer Youth Programs, camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
Yeah. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Jessica Speert. She's a journalist who specializes in stories about wildlife and wildlife enforcement issues. Her new book is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. So in order to really understand how this story all plays out, we should find out a little bit more about the Fish and Wildlife Service. I was surprised, frankly, Jessica, to hear that for as much smuggling as takes place, there are, what, only about a couple of hundred agents to serve the entire United States?
Yeah, there are under 200 agents. And you think about all the, you know, wilderness area we have, and it's amazing. Trying to find anything is like a needle in a haystack. And the way they usually find it, of course, is through a tip.
Yeah, and Ed Newcomer was assigned this, and it was one of his first cases, and he thought, this is going to be a piece of cake, and I can't wait to be done with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, bugs were definitely not his favorite. He was looking for something with gorillas or tigers or, you know, some charismatic
sexy
animal, and to get butterflies and insects was like, yuck. So it was very interesting, but he was actually assigned. The confidential informant was a dealer who complained about Kojima. A lot of people had begun to really complain about Kojima. And the reason was Kojima, for years, back in the 90s, before, you know, his international work even happened, would sort of regularly prowl along the areas here in the U.S., the northern rim of the Grand Canyon, other national parks, and be looking and collecting the Indra cabadensis, the martini. But also he was hammering away at some very legal butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
And he wiped out some local populations for a few years. There's one butterfly called the Apache fritillary, which is one of California's largest and prettiest. And they're on this restricted range on the Sierra's eastern slope. And Kojima would go in and he'd catch like 500 in 2 days, wipe them out, ship them to Japan for sale. And, you know, other collectors, other dealers would have nothing left. And they started getting pretty annoyed about this whole thing, and somebody did complain. And he was set up as a confidential informant at the bug fair, and Newcomer's job was basically to go and watch him and make sure everything went smoothly. And it turned out that as the fair went on, Newcomer started walking around and went over to where Kojima was selling and started talking to Kojima. And Kojima turned, became interested in Newcomer, and suddenly, Newcomer was the guy. The confidential informant was out, and Newcomer was in.
Hmm. And he had developed a character for himself. He was undercover on this assignment, and essentially said that he was selling nautical supplies in a family business, and was unhappy.
Exactly, it was his father's business, and that he liked butterflies. He really didn't have any butterflies, but he wanted to get into it. And at the end of the day, he was walking around the fair, and all of a sudden, he feels a tap on his shoulder, and he turns around. And Kojima's standing there with this small box. And Kojima says, here, this is for you. This is a gift. Just common butterflies, but this is for you to start your collection. And on the top of the box was Kojima's name and phone number. And Ed went racing back to the office thinking, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. Calls his boss, says, you're not going to believe what happened. And that's when she said, the confidential informant is out. You're the guy now.
So there is such a thing as a legitimate trade in butterflies. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there are legal butterflies to be caught that are not endangered in any way that you can sell. The bug fair that goes on, well, there are bug fairs all over the world, but there's one once a year, the big one in the United States. It's at the L.A. Museum of Natural History. And you'll have 70 vendors there that will be selling samples of these gorgeous butterflies, and 14,000 people will go in on a weekend, you know, moms and dads and kids and celebrities, and then you see the real serious collectors with their beautiful polished boxes, and you know these are the guys that are really into it, that, you know, they buy their samples and put them in there. But Kojima would sell under the table at places like this bugs that were illegal, or he would certainly take orders.
So what kind of information did Newcomer need in order to have an arrest that led to a prosecutable, convictable case?
Basically, you need to catch someone in the act.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. He started what turned into a 3-year undercover operation. that sort of crashed and burned twice, and he thought he was never going to get this case off the ground. But the third time, when it finally resurrected again, he started buying butterflies from Kojima. And Kojima was selling him what are called Appendix 2 butterflies, which are ones that you can sell. They're potentially vulnerable, and there's a limited trade, and you need a permit. And, of course, Kojima was selling them without permits, or they were permits that were old, or they were fake, you know, all of this. And then he also started selling newcomer endangered butterflies. At this point, Kojima had moved back to Japan. And so as newcomer is getting all of this stuff, and he's getting, finally, Kojima had sent him this one highly endangered butterfly called Queen Alexandra, that when you think of the panda that's sort of the icon for World Wildlife Fund,
yeah,
that basically is what the Queen Alexandra is for endangered butterflies. And when he got a pair, male-female, of the Queen Alexandra, he knew he had them. But what he had to do was to get Kojima back into this country to arrest him.
What's so interesting about the way this case goes is that, so Ed Newcomer is playing a guy named Ted Nelson, essentially, is his sort of undercover character. And over time, it occurs to him that Kojima is telling him in not so subtle ways that he is attracted to Ted Nelson.
Yeah, he finally catches on to this. Yes, it really happened during the time that Kojima was in Japan, and they were Skyping like a couple times every single day for hours. And he finally realized Kojima had a crush on him and basically was lusting after him. And he basically partly used that to get Kojima back over to the country once he got over his initial shock that Kojima really liked him. So that was part of what brought Kojima over here, was sort of, you know, the possibility of a date.
Yeah, and Kojima would continually, you know, talk about sexual harassment, would make all kinds of comments and would tell tell newcomer over Skype, well, you know, he would ask him to sort of strip naked,
Oh, yeah, undress, yeah.
And I mean, how was newcomer able to sort of hold him off?
You know, Ed was absolutely amazing with this, and I don't know if a lot of agents could have done this. He was very cool. He was absolutely cool. I think, you know, after the initial shock hit, he was totally cool with it. He was able to string him along, able to play it, able to, you know, there's this very fine line. You can't entrap someone.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to walk that very fine line, which he did. You know, he never said, oh, I'm gay or you know, this or this or this. But it was just enough to entice Yoshi and to keep him interested. And that was hard because Yoshi, as you read, was incredibly demanding, and it got worse and worse and worse.
And would be very petulant. For example, when he was married, but you're not supposed to tell anything about your personal life, even in the form of your character,
right?
Your undercover persona. So he would essentially say, well, I'm going off to spend time with my girlfriend, and then Yoshi would get very jealous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, Yoshi is an absolutely fascinating guy. Besides the fact that he is a very charming guy, he's a very smart man. I mean, he got his degree in entomology. He also is a habitual liar.
Mm-hmm.
And the things he came up with, the stories he told that even good friends of his here in the States believed, is absolutely amazing. He wove such a web of lies that when I met him, I knew what were lies, you know, and he would tell them again and again. But you get to a point where he's so charming and he tells his tale so well, you kind of really want to believe him,
mm-hmm.
but you know it's not true, but he keeps pulling you in.
Do you think he's a sociopath?
I don't know. That actually is a really good question. I mean, I don't know. You know, Yoshi has his obsessions, and the only obsession this guy has ever stayed true to is butterflies.
Hmm.
And he's gone from one thing to another. I don't know. It's hard to really know Yoshi's full story, and I certainly got as much of it as I could, and I learned a lot more about him than newcomer knew.
So finally, Yoshi comes to the United States thinking he's going to do some business and certainly thinking that he's going to have a romantic dinner with Ed Newcomer, and that's when he is arrested. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, newcomer was sort of fed up with the whole thing by this point. But I wonder if you've developed a 3-year relationship with a suspect. If newcomer revealed any, did he have any even fleeting sense of sort of guilt when he finally revealed what the deal was?
He said absolutely not. I asked him about that. Mm-hmm. I was really curious. And he said no way. He had really, at that point, 3 years of dealing with a lot of Yoshi's fits and, you know, dropping him and all of the games that he played, he just wanted this case to be over.
Yeah.
And he didn't feel bad. And that was interesting because that's one of the things when I went over to Japan and I didn't know what to expect, and Yoshi was nice to me. He was the nicest person to me over there. And I felt, by the time I was ready to leave, I felt really guilty. Mm-hmm. I felt really bad. I felt, oh, my God, how can I do this? And there was a saving grace, thank God, which is the last time I saw him, we went out to dinner the night before I left. And that's when he suddenly the tables were turned, and I wondered who was conning who, because he started saying some of the same things to me that he said to newcomer when he was really newcomer in to the illegal business. And it sort of hit me like a ton of bricks, because I had gotten to the point where I thought, Yoshi's my friend.
Yeah.
And I realized, no, I'm another dupe to be used.
He wanted to set you up to have a U.S. Portal to selling these things.
Yeah. Yeah. Who better than, you know, some dumb woman who's over there? Yeah.
My guest this hour is Jessica Speard. She's a journalist who specializes in wildlife and wildlife enforcement issues. Her new book is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can make a comment or ask a question by calling in to 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We're going to pause here for a few minutes in order to talk to you a bit more about our spring fundraising campaign. So many of you have been so generous already, and we are really, really sincerely grateful, because your money is what we count on to keep the station strong and vibrant for you. If you haven't had a chance to call yet or to go online and make your contribution, we'll remind you once again, you can do that at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. Perhaps you will want to choose as your thank you gift a copy of Jessica Speard's new book, Winged Obsession. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris Boyd. You know, we have another special combo today that Andy Ibarra, our director of membership, handed to me just a moment ago. He said at the $150 donation level, it's a special combo today. It includes Rick Steves' Mediterranean Mosaic. You get the KERA tote bag. You get the Think mug. And you also get a $25 gift certificate to Canary by Gorgie, which is a restaurant in North Dallas that specializes in Mediterranean cuisine. So that's available today. I think you have to call.
That's $150 contribution?
$150 wow. contribution. So call 888-694-6931, and you can ask for, I believe it's the Mediterranean combo pack.
Will they serve your beverage in the Think mug if you bring it with you?
I'm sure if you ask, they might. I don't know. They might look at you funny.
You could meet some friends of the show when you're out there. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to kera.org. You know there are, let's say, a couple of you out there who listen to these drives time and time again and every season, every year, and you sort of let them pass you by because you assume that we're talking to someone else. In fact, we're talking to you. We're, you know, waiting for you to take an interest in the station sufficient to motivate you to send a few dollars our way. We really appreciate it. You know, Jeff, as you know, and a lot of people who listen know, I have a house full of kids. They're wonderful. They're still learning to be responsible citizens. And things like, you know, starting, you know, the dishwasher or putting things in the dishwasher, you sort of hope that someone else will do it as the parent of the house. But at some point, you know, the rubber meets the road and you have to do it yourself because you want it done. And
it's
and
so hard, too, to start the dishwasher.
Well, I know, but you know what I'm
just
saying.
Just push one little button.
Yeah. Surprisingly, if you were between the age of 9 and 12, yes, it's very hard.
Well, it's the same kind of deal here. You think it's really hard to call and make
a
contribution.
Not that big a deal. And if you want it done, and you want it done right, then you do it yourself sometimes.
It. That's right.
I know. I'm sorry.
Go online.
Going into mommy mode.
Go online to kera.org. And you know, yeah, but Chris is right. You know, Chris, you make a good point. And I think it's We play this we kind of play this game during the drive where we sort of we try to we don't really role play. Maybe we should just full on role play. We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll do that in a later break. But we try to sort of role play with you who is listening, you who are listening to the show, and we try to give you a number of different reasons or examples of why you should join. And you know, Ira Glass does a great job of giving you examples of reasons why you think you shouldn't. And of course,
he always deflates them.
And
he
shoots them down. Yes. So, it's just stop resisting. That's really the message.
Yeah,
today.
We're not pushing timeshare on you.
Exactly.
Here. You know, it's like, you know, $10 a month or less, or maybe a little more. It's, you know, this is not a commitment that is going to break the bank for you and that you're going to regret. In fact, the next time you turn on your radio, you're going to think, that's me. I'm part of that. I made that.
I'm KERA. You can be KERA. Call 888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org and make a contribution. As Chris mentioned, we have Jessica Spirit's book, Winged Obsession, as a thank you gift at the $120 level today. Any book you've heard, any author you've heard on The Diane Rehm Show, Fresh Air with Terry Gross, or The Think Show in the last couple of weeks, those books by those authors are likely still available as thank you gifts during this drive. And today we have, at the $150 level, this special combo includes Rick Steves' Mediterranean Mosaic. You get the KERA tote bag and the Think mug, plus a $25 gift certificate to Canary by Gorgi, a restaurant in North Dallas that specializes in Mediterranean cuisine.
Do you happen to know, is the Rick Steves thing, is that a book or is that a DVD?
I'm not sure.
All right, we'll find out what that is.
I think it's a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
Whatever it is, it's fantastic if it's by Rick Steves. We are very big fans of his here, and we know a lot of you are as well. If you don't want to receive a thank you gift and you just want all of your contribution to go to the programming at the station, that's fine too. A lot of you choose that option. A lot of you choose to make a sustaining membership gift, which basically you assign an amount of money per month to have drawn from your checking account into KERA membership account. And that just keeps going until you tell us to change it or stop it. And the wonderful thing about that is that we can count on your support.
Thanks to the space phone in my hand, I think it's a DVD.
Okay, cool.
I think it's a DVD. It looks like it might be a 2-DVD set.
Score. 1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. You can also take care of all of this online at KERA.org. Your contribution really does make a difference, so please make it now. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Jessica Spirit. Her new book is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Steve in Dallas. Steve says the story rings all the bells for a great movie and wants to know if you've been approached about optioning the book for film.
A few people have asked about it, yes. So I'm just knocking on wood and keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah. Did it strike you as you were writing it as something that would work really well as a screenplay?
You know, I wasn't even thinking about that, mm-hmm. but I think I see a lot of things very visually, having been an actress.
Yeah.
You know, it just sort of happens that way. And the reason I chose to write this as narrative nonfiction was, first of all, when I heard about this story, the truth is stranger than fiction. This is unbelievable. I mean, this was such a dark, quirky, wacky story that I think if you wrote it as fiction, people would say, are you crazy?
Yeah.
No way this could happen. And the amazing thing is it's all real. But I wanted it to have that great suspense that I was feeling, and that was done through narrative nonfiction so that it really does read like a thriller, mm-hmm. but it's all true. And I fell in love with that form, and this story just lent itself to it completely.
Do you think it's unusual that you've moved back and forth so fluidly from fiction to nonfiction?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I think if you like to write, you just like to write. And I mean, the thing that propels me, the only thing I write about really are things that have to do with wildlife, endangered species, wildlife law enforcement. I've been really interested in this for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Yoshiko Jima did go to prison in the United States, but he wasn't there for long. Are there not very stiff penalties for this stuff?
You know what? They thought that was a good penalty.
Really?
It was 21 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They thought that was a good penalty. I think the problem is that our justice system still doesn't realize just how big endangered species is. I mean, it is, according to Interpol, $15 billion illegal trade a year, which means that's the tip of the iceberg. That's what we know about.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot more going on. But it's really hard when you have, you know, murders going on and all the drugs and everything, to get a judge to really take it seriously. I mean, just to sell a case to a prosecuting attorney is hard because they're weighed down with so many other things.
I was really interested. You've given accounts, I think, in other places of the way people smuggle other kinds of wildlife, like people stuffing snakes in their bra and, you know, macaque monkeys in a fake pregnancy bump. And do the new scanners that sort of see you naked, do they make that sort of thing impossible?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, maybe over here, but, you know, I've heard so many stories recently coming out of Thailand, of different places. Some things are being caught, but once again, if some things are being caught, a whole lot more is getting through. Yeah, maybe the scanners will help as far as, you know, what you've got on there in your body.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, with those scanners, don't you have to be pulled out? And it's only certain numbers of people that are going through those real high-level scanners.
I think that might be true, yeah.
So, you know, there's still a really, it's like Russian roulette. There's still a really good chance you can get through.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that is incredibly sad as well, you know, people might worry about the environment as a whole, but particularly have an interest in the individual animals. And there are also cases of animals being smuggled, but also being used to smuggle drugs.
Oh, God. Oh, this is, and you know, nobody talks about this. I did a story years ago on this, a magazine article, and just trying to get the information was like pulling teeth. It's like this big secret that nobody wants you to know about. But there was a great case down in Miami, which, you know, unfortunately, once again, so much stuff flows into the country, and every place is undermanned, you know, as far as inspectors, all this sort of thing. But they'd had a tip-off that cocaine was coming in that were inside condoms that were stuffed up inside of snakes, boa constrictors. And because they'd had this tip, and they, you know, these guys who bring it in figure, what dumb inspector is going to want to stick his hand into a case of boa constrictors?
Yeah.
Not many, right? So they were kind of looking for this, and they did see a bump. They x-rayed, and they found this whole shipment of boa constrictors. I think there were over 300 of them.
Wow.
And they allowed a controlled delivery because they wanted to see where it was going. They allowed it to be picked up. And the DEA got in on it. Fish and Wildlife was in on it. They followed this truck to some complex outside of Miami. The truck was parked. The guy disappeared inside the building and never came back out. And the sun is beating down on these boxes, and they suddenly realize, after hours and hours, these snakes are in big trouble. And by the time they got the papers, they opened up the truck, they went in there, most of the snakes were dead.
Mm.
But this is a great way for people to smuggle drugs. And they've done it not only with snakes, they've done it with, you know, the large goldfish, the koi.
Yeah.
I mean, insane. They've put in, you know, heroin and have sewn the stomach shut. When birds were coming into this country, there was always a certain amount of birds that would arrive dead. They would kill the birds ahead of time, stick drugs in them, sew them back up. And, you know, it's the craziest things that you can think of are going on.
So do the Fish and Wildlife people feel like they're making a dent in this, Jessica?
You know, I think it's like a triage system. You've got to take the most important things, the biggest things, and run with them. But a whole lot goes under the wire.
Yeah.
I think they do what they can. And I have an amazing admiration for these guys. They've got an incredibly rough job. But dealing with endangered species is a lot of like dealing with drug smuggling. You can only catch a certain amount. You can only stop a certain amount. You're hoping that you're making a good example out of those people that you do catch. But I think a lot of these people, just like drug smugglers, are really habitual in what they do. And when they get out, they go back to it again. You know, it's like Kojima. He got out. He went back to Japan. he's back dealing with butterflies. That's what he does.
You have evidence of that because you've been there and seen it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's back to his old tricks. He speaks very good English. What do you know about whether he's read your book yet?
I don't know, but what I do know is that news of my book hit something called Butterfly Listservs about 2 weeks ago, because I did get some emails from somebody in the UK, somebody in Japan, so they know the book is out, and I have a very funny feeling that by now news has hit Kojima. And to be honest, I'm going next weekend to the Bug Fair in Los Angeles. Where my book is going to be for sale. And
so you can't go in disguise.
I can't go in disguise, and it's going to be interesting, because I know that there are two camps about this, and there are two different reactions within the butterfly collecting community. One of them really doesn't like me, and one of them is really defending me.
So the ones who don't like you are the ones who want to collect these Appendix 1 and 2 butterflies?
Well, I don't even know if all of them are collecting Appendix 1 and 2. I can't say that. I think they just don't like the fact that I've written some negative things about collectors. But I'm writing about collectors that are dealing illegally.
Yeah.
I'm not writing about the entire butterfly collecting community. There are a lot of people who are very legitimate, who are totally legal, and that's fine. That's within the law. I'm writing about people who break the law, but there are some people who've gotten pretty angry about this.
As we wrap this up, talk a little bit about the butterfly collecting community, and we can just talk about the legitimate folks here. I was surprised that these are mostly men.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? All of them that I have met are men. I know there are some women, but the majority are men. And You put yourself out on a limb here when you start talking about this. But there was, and I didn't interview him because he's dead, there was a forensic guy who was talking, a psychologist, who was talking about really, really obsessive butterfly collectors. And he did a profile on them. And he said they were men. Most of them were in dysfunctional relationships. If they were in relationships, they had a problem socializing, and that they had control issues. And what better to control than something that is smaller than you, weaker than you? I did interview somebody who is a very obsessive butterfly collector, and he spoke to me on the phone, and he described it. He really wanted a girlfriend. He couldn't get a girlfriend. He couldn't have relationships. But he described his butterflies as having a harem of females. And I thought, whoa.
Beautiful things pinned in a box.
Yes.
Well, Jessica, it really is an amazing, fascinating book to read. I so appreciate the hour that you've spent talking with us.
Oh, I've enjoyed it, Chris. Thank you so much.
The new book by journalist Jessica Speart is called Winged Obsession, The Pursuit of the World's Most Notorious Butterfly Smuggler. Thanks so much to all of you who have been listening this hour. We really appreciate your participation in the show. We especially appreciate those of you who are supporting members of the station. Your dollars right now help us to continue bringing you conversations like this one and like the ones you hear all week, all month, all year on KERA, particularly on The Think Show. If you're a special fan of this show, your contribution right now certainly makes a statement that this is something you really want to continue. If you are a fan of the podcast, your contribution on the web because of the podcast will allow us to continue bringing it to you uninterrupted throughout the year. We'd love to hear from you now online at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. She's Chris Boyd. I'm Jeff Whittington, and we are here to invite you to join the station. It's a really interesting hour, and it addresses a lot of, actually even raises a lot of questions about these kinds of things, environmentally, the impact, and, you know, you never really know what's going on out there, and it's a lot of fun to talk to people about stuff that, that Chris, you and I aren't familiar with, and we know that some of you in the audience aren't familiar with. If that's why you tune in, if that's why you enjoy listening to Think every day, then we think that's why you should support it. It's as affordable as you want it to be. You can become a member of the station on a sustaining membership plan, and you can make, for example, a $20 a month contribution to the station. It comes directly out of your account to KERA's account. That adds up to a $240 membership over the year, but the $20 a month makes it a lot easier for you to budget and a lot more affordable. We like to think that makes it easier on you.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can, of course, always make your pledge online at kera.org. Thank you very much, Leah Weaver in Irving and P.J. Peterson in Dallas. Thank you, Chad and Mikhail in Dallas, and also Karen Smith in Bowie.
888-694-6931, online at kera.org. We do have this special combo today, Rick Steves' Mediterranean Mosaic DVD, the KERA tote bag, the Think mug, and a $25 gift certificate to Canary by Gorgi restaurant in North Dallas. It's a Mediterranean package. That's yours with a $150 contribution. Just call 888-694-6931 and ask for that combo.
1-888-694-6931 is the number, also kera.org. If you make a $120 contribution, you might want to also choose Winged Obsession. That's Jessica Spirit's new book, a really fascinating read. The only thing I can tell you is that although it is just over 300 pages, it will not sustain you for long, because you will tear through that thing in very quickly to find out what happens at the end.
And, of course, that book's available at your book retailer of choice. But we hope that you'll choose to support the station that you've already chosen to listen to, especially during this membership campaign. It's really important that we hear from you online at kera.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931. We only do three of these campaigns a year, and this is the last one in what is our fiscal year. KERA's fiscal year starts on July 1st. It ends on June 30th. And so we won't be fundraising on KERA 90.1 again until the fall. So it's really important that we make this goal. And, of course, the way we structure these drives is we will go till we make the $625,000 goal. But we're making great progress thanks to so many of you. Thanks to everybody whose name we've read. Thanks to everybody who has chosen not to have their name read on the air during the drive. It's your contributions that have led to a total of $380,000 that's been raised to date.
Really amazing, and thank you all for contributing to that. I think it's apparent, I hope it's apparent, that Jeff and I really, really love doing this show for you every day. And sometimes we'll hear from you and you'll say something like, well, I didn't think that I was going to care about, say, butterfly collecting and the people who do this illegally, but I listened for a few minutes and I got drawn in and I stayed the whole hour. I love hearing that, because let me tell you, it works the same way for us. You know, we go through things and we think, well, that should work out. And then once we actually do the research on the topic, you know, you just get drawn in. And it's so such an amazing opportunity to be able to interact with the authors. Of course, I'm able to do this every time and with different kinds of guests, but you have the chance too. You know, you can call in, you can write in, you can interact, you can just listen. And the show is produced here in North Texas. We really feel like it has a North Texas perspective. And that's thanks to you. Your dollars make it possible for KERA to produce local programming. There are stations in many parts of the country that don't have the funding, don't have the ability to produce programs in-house, and they have to take things from other places. They have great programs, but it's really nice to be able to originate programming, including this show and anything you ever wanted to know on Fridays. That happens because of you.
888-694-6931 is the phone number. Go to kera.org and make your contribution as well. If you call, you can choose to receive this at the $150 level today, special combo including Rick Steves' Mediterranean Mosaic, the KERA tote bag, and the Think mug, plus a $25 gift certificate to Canary by Gorgi restaurant in North Dallas.
This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV Sherman.
No matter where you listen, though, it's your source for public radio here in North Texas. It's your public radio station. It's your only public radio station here in North Texas. It's your only station that airs NPR and PRI content for you. As a matter of fact, NPR just celebrated its 40th anniversary this past Tuesday.
I have never seen Justin Martin in such an ebullient mood, and he's always a pretty cheerful guy, but he was just really over the top about this.
Justin Martin is our local All Things Considered host here at KERA, and you know, we were really excited. KERA is really excited to have been a part of that NPR news brand for 37 years. And it's your contributions. If you've been giving over the last 37 years, you're the reason KERA is still here today. If you haven't been giving, we ask that you give something today so that KERA will be here for 37 more years for new people, people who have never even found public radio yet, for those people to discover. You can make that happen. You might actually change somebody's life because you helped make KERA a possibility in the future, and then they heard it. So please do your part right now.
That's a really cool way to use your money, you know, your 120 or 240 or whatever amount of money. It's kind of cool to think that you have the power to do that. We would love to hear from you now online at KERA.org. Of course, you can also make a contribution over the phone. That number is 1-888-694-6931. Back in a couple of minutes with Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Geraldine Brooks.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.